Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So we're making America rake again. I believe we deserve to be the butt of all of these jokes by having this ignoramus as a president. And the hope is that eventually we wake up and realize that the world is laughing at us. And maybe we decide that, I don't know, we'd like someone who actually knows something. Is that not the dumbest thing? But it's the leaves, the leaf. You know, where was Smokey Bear when we needed him? Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the displays over the weekend by our, I hate saying president, but the guy who's sitting in the Oval Office. I've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come talk with us. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So, what do you think? Leaves. It's the leaves. It's not climate change. It's the leaves.
I don't know if you recall back during the campaign in 2016, they published a letter to the editor, and it was from a grade school teacher, and she said that listening to Trump reminded her of students she had that weren't prepared for the assignment, and they would just sort of filibuster and obfuscate and throw in a bunch of information to make it seem like they knew what they were talking about, when really, you know, it's obvious from the outset that they don't. And I think that's, he's winging it through this entire presidency, actually.
No, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, what, and that bothers me. I mean, we've got really, you know, like you said, the kid who's not prepared, who's just, you know, making stuff up as he goes.
Yeah, for sure. And this is where that whole idea of, you know, the poorly educated, he loves the poorly educated. And I think he, in a lot of ways, was projecting. Because even though he has sort of the degrees that were purchased on his behalf, he hasn't really learned anything. And certainly hasn't learned to defer to the experts. And I think that's why he gets stuck with his foot in his mouth on issues as complex as healthcare and climate change, because not number one, he's not willing to admit his own ignorance, but then he's also not willing to delegate or to take information from people who are smarter than he is.
And you know, that's really apparent when you look at some of the reports coming out of the EPA. You know, I was just reading a story today where you've got career civil servants who are, you know, basically hiding under the desk, hoping that they're not going to be targeted next for their writing and their research, because this administration, according to the report, they're looking for any reason to get rid of these civil servants and replace them with a bunch of ideological hacks.
Yeah, for sure. And there were a lot of scientists who were working on climate change that were going to extraordinary measures right after, you know, the election of 2016, once they found out that it was going to be Trump in office, to preserve their data and to preserve all of the years of research that they had, because they were afraid that that information was going to be destroyed, not just ignored, but actually destroyed intentionally.
I mean, we're in for very interesting times, especially now, because I see Trump now taking a much more combative position, especially as, you know, the Mueller thing starts to squeeze and you know, more of that starts coming out. And also, as the Democrats hopefully find their voice and come together, hopefully, and really start investigating some of the shenanigans that have been going on.
Yeah, for sure. And I think this is a very, at least for Trump, again, we have to kind of go back to, you know, his narcissistic roots. I mean, I think this is a very difficult thing for him to swallow. Whatever, you know, truthful information he's allowing to get through about the midterm election, just on its face, I think the Democrats taking so many seats in the House, I mean, actually winning a historic amount of seats back, really speaks to how poorly he's done as president, and how his stewardship of the entire Republican Party has just, you know, it's just been in the toilet. And I don't think there's a nice way to sugarcoat that or to make that better. And so I think that his response to that over the last couple of days, and you know, going on weeks since the election, is to double down on his ignorance and to double down on the things that he thinks makes him endearing to people. But it actually, I think, is really a sign of how insecure he feels and inadequate he feels that he's lost. Because this is he's taking this personally, I think, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, I look at the behavior over the weekend, you know, while traveling to California, and you go, can you insult people anymore, especially people who've lost everything, and also the people who, you know, who are fighting this? I mean, it was disgraceful on so many levels.
Yeah, I mean, he continues to force himself on people in whole entire cities that don't want him there. He's not adding anything to the conversation. I think everybody knows at this point that he's doing it for the purposes of a photo op and to actually look like he's on top of what's going on. But I think fundamentally, you know, when it comes to climate change and also when it comes to these mass shootings, everybody knows that the basic outlines are that the Republican Party is not going to do anything meaningful to actually fix the problem. And so I think when he goes to California, you know, yes, there's this backdrop of him being very insensitive and insulting. But there's also just the fact that, you know, he's going to deny climate change. He's going to deny the whole reason why this event is even happening. So I think it makes people less interested in seeing him there or hearing anything he has to say about the entire issue. It's just garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah. And it's always attack, 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 especially,
right.
Especially, you know, anyone who would be on Hillary Clinton's side. And I look at this attack of this admiral, and you go, you know, exactly, you know, on what grounds do you get to attack this guy?
I mean, on the grounds that he feels insecure and inadequate on a foreign policy standpoint. I mean, we have this thing with the journalist in Saudi Arabia, and I think he looks very weak in general with that whole issue. And then if you back that up to North Korea, and they're still testing missiles and doing everything they apparently, you know, said to him they weren't going to do anymore. And then, you know, you tack on just Russia. I mean, that whole thing is hanging over his head as well. And the fact that we're not doing anything, you know, to enforce the sanctions, and that he continues to play nice with somebody who is our adversary, I think that he really has nowhere to go from a foreign policy standpoint. And again, when he looks weak, he's going to do whatever he can to puff his chest out and put up this narcissistic defense that makes at least the people who are his biggest fans rally behind him and think that he's strong on these issues.
Yeah, I just don't know how you can do that. I mean, my mind is still trying to get around Veterans Day. You know, I'm still trying to figure this one out. I mean, he is, you know, and the, you know, not going to Arlington to me is the big one. I mean, I think it's like the first time in like 56 years that a president hasn't gone and laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And you go, you know, how is it if you're, you know, look, I understand you could be a jingoistic right-wing ideological hack and love Trump and all that, but how can you look at that and say that's okay?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how they can square and reconcile the way he's been so disrespectful to military service and to really, I think, you know, people who are regarded across the political spectrum as war heroes. I mean, if you think of John McCain again, this is someone who, you know, he doesn't really give a damn what his reputation is in terms of being a war hero. And he's insulted Gold Star families. He's insulted active duty troops by going and, you know, using them in a political stunt at the border. So I think it's pretty obvious that he cares about the military insofar as it can make him look strong or make him look like he actually is bigger than he really is. And, you know, I think in some ways the fact that, you know, he wanted this really big military parade and this really jingoistic display and that he actually got pushback from them, I think speaks to just his misunderstanding of what the military is even for. And I think that a lot of that comes from his lack of experience there. I mean, again, this is somebody who weaseled out of going to war on numerous occasions.
Yeah, but you know, it would have been really cool to have a big toy parade.
Speaking of toys, for him, it would have been huge.
Of course it would have been. And as I said, I would have loved to see the tank get swallowed up on Pennsylvania Avenue to highlight how bad our infrastructure is. And then maybe we could fix it, because the only time we ever seem to do anything is when we can justify it for military purposes. And I know everyone loves to give Eisenhower credit for building the highway system, but he sold it as a way to get bombs around the country.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just think about what's happening right now with the GI Bill. And how many veterans are looking at being evicted.
Yeah.
And being homeless in the street. And he still, almost 2 years into this, does not have someone heading up the VA. I mean, you would think that's like a very easy slam dunk appointment, but why hasn't he made it to this point?
Well, he's got the three buddies down in Mar-a-Lago who are taking care of it.
I mean, but I think in terms of just the people who know better, who are actually serving and who can actually look back and go, okay, was this president there for us? Was he a commander in chief? I mean, this is somebody who keeps saying that he's going to actually visit the troops in combat zones, and he hasn't done that.
Yeah. And what's interesting to me is you see a ton of these former military people, you know, the former generals and admirals, you know, coming out and saying this guy's a disgrace. Mm-hmm. You know, this guy's, I forget what the one guy said. You know, his attack on the media is the most devastating thing to democracy that he's ever seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all of these former military people who can speak out now.
Yeah.
Speaking out, saying, look, this is bad. Because look, the people who are currently in the military, they can't speak out.
Right.
It's the people who've retired and moved on. You look to them as the litmus test of what the rest of the leadership might be thinking, and it's not good.
No, it's not good. And I think what is really salient in this moment is that what they have done, even though they're not speaking out very vocally, I think that anonymous op-ed that came out where they very much intimated that the military brass are having to, they're going into meetings with him and they're kind of nodding their head and going, okay, yes, Mr. President, yes, Mr. President. But then once he leaves the room, they're like, there's no way in heck we can do what he's just saying, to us. And that idea that he has all of these wild ideas, but everyone around him is having to contain it and prevent some of these things from actually happening. I think that sentiment has come forward in a lot of ways, not just from the military, but also from the intelligence community. And the big fight that he had with Brennan and all of these former, intelligence heads about their security clearances. The people who actually know what there is to know that this guy is, he's in way over his head. And he's not able to actually fill this role in the way that President Obama did before him, or really any president that came before that, and that it really is unprecedented how unqualified he is to serve.
Yeah, and to me, I guess there's part of me that goes, I should be grateful that he doesn't know what he's doing.
Right.
Because if he really knew what he was doing, how much damage could he do then?
For sure. Yeah. For sure. I mean, like, if you think about George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, and Dick Cheney being somebody who had been at multiple levels and knew how to really work it and work it to a point where, you could get away with it. And it was something that you could make your foreign policy and your domestic policy. But somebody like Trump, who has members of his family there that are also unqualified, right? And who appoints people to positions based on what they've done for him in the past or what they're promising to do for him in the future, then ultimately none of these agencies are staffed with people who are, really interested in getting the job done and making that agency work as efficiently as it's supposed to work. And so that's why I think you also see all of these other agencies falling apart under the leadership of the quote-unquote best people that he brought to the table.
Yeah, and speaking of best people, you know, kind of switching gears here for a second, because I gotta get to, you know, one of the best people there on the right, this Cindy Hyde Smith of Mississippi.
Oh, God.
I gotta go there because, you know, did you watch the press conference she had after her idiotic statement that she'd be in the front row of a hanging? Which,
yeah.
Again, I don't know how those words ever are able to come out of your mouth, especially if you're running for office or you think that's okay. But the press conference was really amazing to me, as where it was billed as she's going to respond to her idiotic comment, uh-huh. only to have her say, I put out a statement, I'm not saying anything else.
And then she called out black women as, you know, perpetrating some genocide against ourselves.
Yeah, then it turned into an abortion thing. And I'm going, wait a second. Why did you bring this other woman in to talk about abortion? What's that got to do with the hanging?
Well, what it's got to do with it is that she's running as a Republican in Mississippi, and you can get away with this type of thing if you're a Republican in Mississippi. And Trump is going to campaign with her twice and finds nothing wrong with that. Actually sees this as somebody he should associate himself with, and she sees him as somebody she should associate herself with, on the heels of saying something as atrocious as what she said. So neither of these people has any insight.
Or maybe they do, and we're just the ones who are not getting it.
Well, I think they know who votes for them, and I think they know that those people are not going to care what they say. And if it's something that so happens to be racist, or ignorant, or sexist, that's okay. That's actually what they want. And so there's no problem with it, and it's no harm, no foul if they still get the votes they need to win whatever election they're running in.
And this is where, you know, I begin to look at, up until, you know, about 6-8 months ago, I believed our founding fathers were brilliant. They laid out, you know, partially a great plan on, you know, this wonderful experiment and self-rule, except for, you know, obviously, you know, the original flaws and that. But, you know, I'm starting to look at the Senate and this, you know, equal representation thing going, you know, this woman in Mississippi is going to have equal representation as Kamala Harris in California, representing, you know, millions more people. It's scaring me. It's kind of scaring me when people like this can get into office. I mean, I guess maybe it's just the time, but really, really not in a good place.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, again, any time you have certainly, I think the documents themselves speak to the time that they were written in. I mean, you know, we have to remember that they wrote All Men Are Created Equal, but again, they were holding slaves while they were writing that, and they didn't necessarily see all men and women as equal at that time. And so I think the fact that hypocrisy and privilege can actually be written into our laws, even though on their face when you read them, they look very nebulous and like, okay, that's egalitarian, that should work for everyone. But I think that people know that when they have the reins of power in their hands, they can use those very nebulous words to actually propagate their own supremacy and their own privilege. And that is what we've seen in this country for hundreds of years now.
Yeah, I look at this and I'm going, you know, I know the runoff is on November 27th and I'm hoping SB wins because this woman's just bat, you know what, crazy.
Yeah, I mean, but even if you think about, like, Georgia and Brian Kemp, I was looking at some clips from Fox News. Don't ask me why I was doing that. But, you know, it's amazing how ultimately their take on the whole situation is that there wasn't this sort of, like, massive voter suppression effort underway. and that Brian Kemp ran a fair fight.
And exactly how do you come to that conclusion?
Well, I think it's easy to come to that conclusion if you're always going to side with the white guy. You know, if the way that your politics swings is that there's no way a black woman, as Donald Trump himself said, should be qualified to hold that position, then it doesn't really matter what the white guy on the opposite side did, you know, in the lead up to that election. It doesn't matter the ways that he used the system to bar people who might vote against him. That just looks like, hey, he's a shrewd politician, and he worked the system in his favor. Don't hate the player, hate the game. And that's how that side chooses to see that issue. And so I think they know that will play well to their base, and they don't really care that it won't play well to everyone else.
Now, I don't know how you justify the allocation of resources. You know, some lines in places four and a half, 5 hours long. They closed, you know, a couple hundred polling places, especially in minority areas. The reports of, you know, 1.5 million people, you know, purged from the voting rolls by Kemp. I don't know how you can look at that and go, yeah, that was fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's as simple as my side won.
Yeah, okay.
It's as simple as my side won. And, you know, like, again, Donald Trump, you should have to have an ID to buy cereal.
Well, he probably should.
I mean, but he says that, and just think of how many people just end up agreeing with that, because that they think that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because ultimately that agrees with their side.
That is just crazy. And let's finish on a happy note. What are you doing for the big holiday? Anything exciting?
Spending time with family. I mean, that's exciting. I don't know. It's not really like.
No, it's what you're supposed to do. It's that, yeah. You know, holidays are about family. It's, you know, and I know we kind of forget the norms now of crazy, you know, but, you know, look, you know, we used to do that. We used to get together with family, even with the curmudgeon uncle who used to yell at the TV and was the Fox News guy. We invite him too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I took my kids to see The Grinch over the weekend.
We did the exact same thing. Good. Did you like it or not? I wasn't a big fan. I thought it was, you know, that's one of those things you could probably have seen on TV. My wife loved it.
Yeah, I thought it was super cute, and I really enjoyed it. And I, you know, I just thought that the whole idea of Christmas, you know, it's nice to be reminded of the reason for the season. Or why we come together, and not necessarily this like capitalistic idea of buying more things and being greedy, et cetera. And so I like the opportunity to have that conversation with my kids. And so I appreciate, you know, even if it is like an animated movie, just kind of opening the door to that conversation.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. Are you shopping on Blackfire or staying home?
I don't do that.
Good for you. Good for you. Another one joins the club.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like being sort of forced to buy things.
I'm right there with you. But, Jana,
I already have all the emails.
There you go. I hope you and your family have a wonderful holiday, and I look forward to talking to you again on the other side.
You too, and I'm glad you're doing well, and y'all have a great holiday too.
Thank you. You too. Appreciate it. Our good friend Propane Jane, quick break. Right back. Stick around. No shopping on Friday. Desperate times, so desperate measures we explore. Marching on the Capitol to lobby leaders for involvement. 3,000 people screaming out, where's our government? Lawsuits and arraignments, members under company surveillance. Public divided, either they love us or they hate us. Profit billions off our back, and it's still not enough. They should have took into account that we never give up. We'll be here one day longer. One day longer. The people's voice is stronger.
Home after home, neighborhood after neighborhood, completely destroyed.
The death toll continues to rise as California wildfires rage on.
We have a real challenge here, threatening our whole way of life.
While state officials grapple with preparing for tomorrow's disasters. Climate change may impact male fertility, new study shows. Plus,
we kind of just got to roll up our sleeves and do it ourselves. And if we want to make this change, We have to do it.
New Democrats push old guard to take bold action on climate change.
All of that bold action and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And at a time like this, it is hard to know the right thing to say. But for the wrong thing to say, let's check the president's Twitter feed.
Let's not. You're welcome. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I'm sorry to say we have to start with more grim news coming out of California out here.
Yes, those three devastating wildfires in both Northern and Southern California. As of airtime, the fires have killed nearly 60 people statewide, with at least 80 still listed as unaccounted for. The historic Camp Fire in Northern California is now the nation's deadliest wildfire in over 100 years. Victims have filed the first lawsuit of what is likely to be many against electric utility Pacific Gas and Electric, alleging negligence by PG&E in maintaining their overhead power lines. The state's seasonal rains have still not materialized, and no rain is in the forecast through at least Thanksgiving.
Do we know now, in fact, that it was the PG&E power lines that sparked these fires?
Not yet. An investigation is underway. It does seem likely. Repeated devastating wildfires over the last few years have pushed California officials to begin the monumental task of adapting the state's infrastructure, emergency response, and its insurance sector to grapple with more frequent extreme weather disasters caused and made worse by man-made global warming and the resulting public health emergencies and the long-term economic costs of recovery. In an interview with CBS News, fire consultant and former Sacramento fire chief Kurt Henke said those meetings began a few months ago.
We are working, of course, together with both the insurance industry, the utilities industry, all stakeholder groups to try to figure out how to address these new dramatic climate-driven events that are going to be the new norm that we're going to be dealing with for the next 50 to 100 years.
In my humble opinion, it is a conversation that folks in every state should be demanding from their elected officials. Meanwhile, global warming may reduce male fertility, cutting sperm counts in half due to higher temperatures, at least for beetles. A UK study found that in the lab, simulated heat waves damaged the sperm of insects. Repeated heat waves made them nearly sterile, and the damage could be passed down to the beetles' offspring.
Well, thankfully, it's only beetles.
Well, a different study found that male sperm counts are declining and climate change may be to blame.
Oh.
And a different study on top of that recently found that populations of flying insects have declined by more than 75%. Over the last 30 years in Germany, but the researchers say more study is needed to determine if global warming is a factor there. In other news, a high-ranking Trump Environmental Protection Agency official has been indicted in Alabama on charges related to his previous job as a consultant. EPA Region 4 Director Trey Glenn, a Trump appointee, was indicted this week on state corruption charges for working to prevent a severely polluted Birmingham neighborhood from being added to the federal Superfund list because it would have forced the industries responsible for the pollution, his clients, to help pay for the cleanup.
Has this wildly corrupt EPA official resigned?
Not yet.
Of course not.
And in Washington, Democratic Congresswoman-elect Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York joined dozens of climate activists with the Sunrise Movement at a sit-in at the office of House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi on Tuesday. The protest was in support of forming a congressional select committee for a Green New Deal to begin the process of crafting concrete, evidence-based climate action legislation that is equal to what scientists say is necessary. Ocasio-Cortez responded to critics of the Pelosi protest, saying it's intended to bolster Democrats' ambition to act on climate change.
This is an encouragement of her, and this is to show that we're here to back up bold action and that she will be supported in that.
I think Nancy Pelosi can use all the support she can find right now. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, or Google Play. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has